I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. We have another rendition to get through today, and I do have my pages of outrages today, because there's a lot of things for us to talk about. There's topical things, there's religious things, and there's crime, right? So I'm trying to break down, you know, I always toy with how do I want the format to go? Do I just want it to be some ideas that I have, or do I want to come up with a topic line or try and spring it together? Or should I do segments, you know, like a crime segment or a religion segment or whatever? So I'm trying to figure out what's going to work best as we go forward. But I do have a crime segment here today. We'll talk about some criminal things because I think we're chasing justice, aren't we? That's the whole idea. So if you go to the AmericaOutloud.news platform, right, and I'm going to go there right now. I'm going to go right on my computer here, and I'm going to go look this up, and then I'm going to get to, let's see, there's new articles out here today. I put out a new article, and I want to draw some attention to it because I think it's important. It's going to be part of what we talk about today, because something potentially life-changing for all of us has now taken place. So if I can find our, as I'm going through, I don't like to look things up while we're talking, so I'm just going to give it to you the straight. So recently, we saw there was a school shooting at the Oxford High School in Michigan. It was over a year ago. If you don't remember, the killer, and I don't like to mention the killer's name, but because it's important, I think, to this part of the story, I think I have to. The kid's name was Ethan Crumbly, and I think he was 15 years old, maybe. And Ethan apparently had a lot of problems. He had some mental issues going on. We don't know how in-depth they went into it. I wrote an article about it, Michigan school shooting. It was called What Went Wrong. I think it was on the platform. If it's not, I will send it over to the editors and they can put it up there so that there's some connection to this new article. So the new article is about the mother and father, James and Jennifer Crumbly, who were charged criminally. They were charged criminally under interesting legal decisions, okay? So what they did is the prosecutor took the concept of vicarious liability. Now, this vicarious liability is well known in civil courts. All right, so the best example of it you might know and be aware of is the bartender that overserves a drinking patron. All right, so the bartender is in the bar and actively talking with the patrons that are there. They're ordering drinks. He or she is pouring the drinks, taking the money, doing the transactions, and they're monitoring the drinkers, right? Because you don't want to overserve somebody. All of our states have these rules that you can't overserve somebody, which means if they start to get intoxicated, you have to stop. You know, that's it. You're flagged, is what it's called in a lot of places. You're flagged, and it means you can no longer purchase alcohol because you are that intoxicated. So in this particular case, let me finish that. So what happens is if the bartender knowingly then overserves a patron, somebody who's obviously drunk, slurring their words, intoxicated, having a hard time thinking, but the bartender keeps serving them drinks. And then that person goes out and gets in their car and on their way to wherever they're going, while they're that intoxicated, they crash and they kill somebody or a bunch of people in a car. The person who drove the car, obviously, vehicular homicide for killing people while intoxicated. But you will also then see vicarious liability go back to the bartender. because the bartender should have known better than to continually serve someone who was that intoxicated. And they shouldn't have done it, but they did it anyway. So they have liability, right? So there's liability on the bartender. So when we look at vicarious liability, it normally means that a company is responsible for the actions of an employee, a subordinate. So if I run a company and somebody does something bad, there's vicarious liability to me. But it's all been civil, really. The concept of criminal liability that can be from one person to another is usually connected through the concept, the legal concept, criminal law concept of a conspiracy. You know, we all agree to do something criminal. Well, just because we all agree to go rob the bank, that doesn't mean we're criminals. What we have to do to trigger the charge of conspiracy is that we have to act on that decision, right? So if we're all sitting around and say, hey, let's go rob the Third Avenue Bank at Tuesday at 3 o'clock, they get a ton of money brought in there every week. Let's go do, would that be a good idea? And we all start laughing at, oh yeah, that'd be a great idea. Let's go rob the bank and we'll be rich. Did we commit a crime? No, not at that point. We talked some stupid nonsense. We shouldn't have, you know, engaged in a conversation like that. But we haven't committed a crime. But if I was to say, okay, Harry, you go down there and take pictures of the bank. Muriel, you go in the bank and take a look around inside, see how many security cameras there are. Frank, you go get some guns. Jason, you go get a van and we can all come in. And we actually do those things. We've now done acts in furtherance of the conspiracy, and that is the crime. All right, so in that way, the vicarious liability might go, we all planned it, and we all did it, but now it's time to do it, and I take off. I'm still responsible because I was part of the conspiracy. Conspiracy is in of itself a crime that people can be convicted of. We've seen that example when a wife might go and say she wants her husband killed, and she's trying to find someone who will kill him, and she gets put on to somebody who turns out to be an undercover cop, usually. And makes conversation. The woman says, I want my husband dead. I want this. I want that. The cop will then say, okay, well, I need $5,000 cash, a picture of your husband, and write down his schedule. Right? Once the wife does that, once she hands over the money, hands over the picture, and writes down the schedule, she has taken action to further the conspiracy, and that's the crime. And that's usually when we go in and lock them up. Now, I've done several of those in my careers. We've had women who want to kill their husbands, and they got in touch with somebody they thought would be someone who might do, and that person said, I ain't getting involved in this, and they told us, say, hey, this woman's trying to get her husband killed, and she asked me to do it. And then we asked the person if they will act in undercover capacity as an informant and, you know, do some things, or maybe introduce them to somebody else, say, hey, listen, I can't do it, but my friend Bobby, he'll do it, he'll definitely do it, and he wants to do it. And that's usually an undercover officer. And that undercover officer would then go in and portray the killer, right? You know what I mean? And then the wife gives him the money, gives him the stuff. And that's the conspiracy. And then you lock her up at that point because you don't want somebody to actually get hurt. And we have the crime of conspiracy. All right, so I think we covered that, right? I think we understand the criminal side of that liability. When it comes to civil, just like in our bartender, you know, our bartender that keeps serving someone when they shouldn't have, there's that vicarious liability. The person that's overserved is drunk, now goes out and crashes their car, kills themselves, kills other people, does whatever. There's liability on the part of the bartender because they should have known better. They were interacting. See, and in that way, you have the bartender actually participating in the prohibited action. That prohibited action is over-serving the person who's drinking. This wasn't like the bartender, you know, didn't know nothing about it. The guy was sitting at a table by himself and he brought his own booze in. The bartender was talking to him, making observations of this person. Are they intoxicated? Are they not intoxicated? Should we not serve them anymore, right? These are decisions that a bartender should be trained in, and because there is that vicarious liability to them, and then to the bar, right? Because that's how it usually goes. In an employee, I own the bar, and my bartender does the wrong thing, I'm responsible for his or her behavior and their actions, which is over-serving a patron. So that's vicarious. It goes up the line. What happened in the Crumbly case And this is where it can be, it is right now. It's the first time ever that parents of a shooter have been charged with manslaughter, four counts of manslaughter, because they did not take the actions they should have taken to prevent their son from killing four of his classmates and injuring many more. They were convicted. The parents were convicted, and they were sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison, each of them. They each had their own trial. The wife, Jennifer, had a trial, and the husband, James, had a trial, and they were found guilty by juries, and the judge sentenced them to 10 to 15 years. Now, the reason I wrote the article, which is basically the slippery slope, the Crumbly case, you can go on AmericaOutloud.news and, you know, look up Lieutenant Joe or look up articles, and you'll see my article on there. I think it's pretty good. It's not a short article. I put a lot of information into it. But this is an important thing. Do you know why? And this is another reason I wrote it. Because if this case survives appellate challenges, and the lawyers have said for both of them that they're going to appeal to the next level, because this has never been done before. Right, so this has never been done before. Nobody's been charged like that. No parent's been charged. Parent of a shooter has been charged because they didn't take certain actions. Now, this is where I break it down, because we have to understand, if there's a specific law in Michigan that says that parents are criminally responsible for the actions of their children, if the parents are aware of that criminal action, and if they do nothing to stop the child from engaging in criminal activity, whatever it is, then I'd say, well, that's an established law. It's in place. What I think happened here is the prosecution, and like everyone else, when we see one of these school shootings, our consciousness is shocked, right? We can't believe that these people go in and do these things and kill little children, high school kids, middle school, we've seen them all. And these are shocking to our senses, absolutely. And we all want something to be done about it. I mean, there's every time there is an event, a school shooting, we hear, you know, immediately certain groups of people will attack guns. They use it as an opportunity to attack guns in the Second Amendment. We've got to go after the guns, The guns didn't go into the school and shoot themselves. And that's a whole nother argument. But the reality is, that is not the appropriate response to these school shootings. But I think the prosecutor in Michigan and the community and everyone, I think they are just so, like all of us, we are just so tired of this happening over and over and over again that they wanted to hold someone accountable besides the shooter. So, if you don't know the story with Ethan, he pled guilty at 16 years old, and he was sentenced to life without parole. So he will spend the rest of his life sitting in a jail cell for the four lives that he took and the many people he injured. His parents, though, was that an appropriate charge? Was that appropriate to go after the parents? And that's the point of my article. And I think the prosecution, you know, worked the law that they had available to them to come up with the criminal charges against the parents. And then they had a trial, and the juries found them guilty, that they were responsible. They were responsible and had committed manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, because of their actions, their parenting, what they did or didn't do, what information they acted on and didn't act on, what help they got this boy who was having mental problems. And I think many people applauded this. Many people applauded this because finally somebody is holding somebody accountable for this. Now, I'm not opposed to it, right? So one of the things I had a concern when I was writing the article is that I don't want to be misinterpreted, because I'm asking the question, was it the right thing to do to go after the parents? Now, there's a difference in right thing between what we feel Yes, it's right. Get them parents. They didn't stop that kid. They didn't do the right thing. And these children were killed because these parents didn't do the right thing. They're responsible for their kid, right? That's the emotional side of it. The side I'm looking at is when it comes to criminal culpability, what responsibility do you have in a crime? And if there's not a specific law that's been enacted by the legislature in any state or anywhere and signed off by the governor that makes it an official law, if you twist other statutes or you twist these statutes, and I don't mean this in a negative way, I mean you find, hey, there's elements here we think fit this, and that's why they charged and they got their conviction. My questions are, did the parents get convicted because they were guilty, that they could have prevented these deaths? Or did they get convicted because everyone is so upset? Everyone is so upset they want more people held accountable because we feel helpless in the face of these school shootings. What, you know, what else can we do? And we went after these parents, okay? So the reason that that's important, to differentiate the two, between break down the emotional response and the legal response, is because this is going to be viewed by the courts, right? The parents already said through their attorneys that they're going to appeal their conviction and their sentencing because they don't think it's right. They shouldn't have been charged, convicted, and have to go off to prison. They didn't do the killing. Their son did, right? So some of the things that came out in the trial, and we don't have all the facts. I didn't sit through the trial. You didn't sit through the trial. We read them in the newspaper. We heard the accounts on the news of what was going on. Apparently, the shooter had expressed to his parents that he was having mental difficulties, and he wanted some kind of mental health. Now, it's been reported that the father said something to the effect of, hey, listen, suck it up. You know, we all have strange feelings or whatever, but did not get him any mental health help from a doctor. He said he wanted medication, and his mother apparently told him he wasn't getting medication. They were indifferent is what I think was portrayed. These parents had this kid who was having mental trouble, and their parenting was so poor that eventually when the kid went off and he killed four innocent people and hurt many others, if the parents had taken him to the doctor, if they had parented better, then those four innocent young people would not have been killed. Those families wouldn't have been destroyed by the actions of this killer. I think that's the concept here. Now, we can all get that. My point is, if there is not a specific law that addresses vicarious liability for criminal stuff from child to parent, then this is probably going to be overturned on appeal. Excuse me. And we will see as it goes through the courts. So the judge in this case, everyone was expecting that they would get 8 years in prison. That would be the sentence. And that's the guideline in the state of Michigan for involuntary manslaughter. I believe that's what that was the charge. This judge said she can go outside the guidelines if the conduct of the defendants in committing the crime was egregious or was shocking or was deserving of a higher punishment. And that's why she went above the presumed sentence and went 10 to 15 years, right, to prison. So the judge saw that as heinous, their actions as heinous. The juries obviously saw it and saw that they had responsibility. And that's where they adjudicated them as guilty, that their parental skills were poor. They didn't take the right actions. The other thing was they bought the kid a gun like 4 days before the shootings. And I think all of us would have to say, you know, okay, why would you buy a kid with mental problems a gun? You see what I mean? That's one of the things I think factored in here is that they were saying, why would his kids have mental problems and you go and buy him a gun? What were you thinking? You are responsible that this kid now has a gun to go and kill these kids in school. And again, that is, I wouldn't have done it. You know, most people wouldn't have done it, but these parents did it and we don't know why. Now, I know in the Sandy Hook shooter case, that young man was supposed to have had he was on the spectrum. He had some type of mental condition, and he couldn't connect, apparently, very well. And his mother found that the one way she could connect to him is that he liked shooting. He liked shooting guns, you know, going to the range and shoot. So she took him to the range because she wanted to interact with this young man. Now, if you don't have anybody in your family with this kind of a mental condition, autism on the spectrum, you don't understand the pain that people must be under. So I'm not laying blame at the mother of the Sandy Hook shooter. I mean, she was trying to connect to her boy who had a problem. Now, was guns the right way to do it? I don't know. It turns out, obviously, it was a horrible decision. But at the time, she thought she found a way to connect to him. So that's why she bought him the guns and she went to the range with him. Unfortunately, he had other demons going on, and he killed his mother first in her bed, and then he went to the Sandy Hook Elementary School and killed the children and the teachers, which is absolutely tragic and horrific in itself. But you can say, what was she thinking getting guns? So you can see, and I don't want to conflate this into the gun argument, but you can see where anti-gun people would look at a thing like that and say, see, if we didn't have any guns, if there were no guns available, then these parents that bought these killers guns, they wouldn't be anybody dead because there would have been no guns, right? So they can conflate that argument. Well, really what you have is you have the killers are people with serious problems that need to be addressed, okay? So let's continue down this road. And here's why, again, I'm going to give you the reasons why I wrote this article. It's important for every one of us because every one of us that has children, that has minor children, based on this verdict and outcome, if this is upheld through the appellate division and then it goes to the Supreme Court and then it ends up, if Supreme Court of Michigan ends up in the federal Supreme Court and they uphold the convictions of these parents saying, yes, they are liable for the actions of their underage son who committed murder and therefore, based on the facts of the case, the parents are criminally liable. They have vicarious liability that is criminal, and off to jail they go. Well, that includes you and me now. That includes you and me now, because if we have children who are under 18, and they're under our influence, so just like the civil matter where an employee, right, that does something bad, the company that they are employed by can be held responsible. Right? Like in the bar can be held responsible, the owner of the bar, everybody, because of what the employee did. Well, what they've done now is they've stretched this out to say this now covers parent and child. So you have vicarious liability for the actions of your children. So we can look at the Crumbleys as two parents who did a very, very poor job of parenting. If their kid asked for mental health, if he was having problems and he wanted help and they didn't give it to him, that is very bad parenting. Just like the kid saying he has appendicitis and they won't take him to the doctor. That's very bad parenting, no doubt about it. The kid's not going to school at all and you just let him continue not going to school. That's bad parenting. The kid steals and you don't try and rectify the fact that this kid's a shoplifter, a stealer, whatever. That's bad parenting. Is bad parenting criminally liable when someone goes and does something violent like this? And that's the crux of the question that we all need to ask ourselves now. Because while we might feel good that the Crumbleys were arrested, convicted, and are going to prison, because it gives us someone to be responsible for the loss of innocent lives, the four kids that were killed in that high school, were innocent, beautiful young people that had the whole lives ahead of them, and they were snuffed out by this kid with problems, right? But we can't lose the fact that the kid with problems is the one who killed the other children. So the facts of the case will be coming out in the days and weeks to come, the specifics, because I saw the father during sentencing, and he basically said, you don't know all of the facts. All of the facts did not come out. Now, a lot of defendants say that at trial. When they're being sentenced. You don't know the whole truth. The whole truth wasn't told here, you know, and that's neither here nor there. But I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's more to the story than what we saw. But the lawyers brought out what they wanted to bring out in their defense, and the prosecution basically made a case to the jury that these parents knew or should have known that this kid was dangerous. They should not have given him a gun. Had they not given him a gun, he would not have gone into the school and killed four classmates. That's the crux of what happened here. So the questions that we need to ask as a society is, are we okay with that? Do we want to hold parents and guardians of young people accountable for everything those young people do? And we can say, yes, they should be, you know, preventing their kids, you know, from committing crime and doing this and that. Well, let's look at a couple of other examples. The shooter one is almost an easy one to think. Of course, you know, people died, and it's emotional. And while it's emotional and it's heart-wrenching, doesn't mean it's the right course of action. And that's what we need to think through. That's what I'm trying to think through. So I think I am okay with it if we establish it through law, that there is vicarious criminal liability for the actions of someone under 18, that you are, that your child, or your child that you're in charge of, you know, whoever you are. But here's where the problem comes in. Do we limit it to just incidents of active shooter? And then don't we have to look at each and every case to say, well, this person may have had mental conditions, but nobody knew it was undiagnosed, which many people have undiagnosed mental conditions, don't they? They all do. Lots of people do. So whose fault was that? How do we determine the level of parenting skill someone has? Should they have to take a test for us to say, well, if this kid, these parents are so stunned that this kid's, you know, saying he's going to shoot people and they think he's joking and they don't want to do anything about it. Who sets that up? Who's going to look at that? Right? And there's some more scenarios that I'm going to come up with we're going to take a break in a minute. But when we come back, there are more scenarios that we all need to consider, because remember, if this case stands, that this vicarious liability for criminal actions of an underage person can be can drag the parents in and have them be criminally liable, then that's going to change every one of our lives. And immediately, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, that's good, because then these kids that are out there doing these bad things, whatever kind of bad things it is, not just school shootings, well, now their parents are going to straighten them out and make them do the right thing. And a simple question here to think about as we go off on our little bit of a break here is, do we allow parents to discipline and punish their children anymore, or then the parents get locked up, depending on how they punished or disciplined their child, right? We'll be back in a minute with more.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms. But left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
All right, welcome back, everybody. All right, so this conversation, it's a deeper conversation. And that's why I'm glad we're having it, because it's something that can affect all of us, and we do need to think about it. And it's going to come up. I think our legislatures across the country are going to be watching the course of this case as it works its way through the court system. And you'll see other states, if not most, if not all states, then come up with vicarious liability criminally for parents based on the actions of their underage person that they either are parent or guardian of. So one of the things I was talking about is, where do you draw the line on this? Where do you draw the line on what activities? Or is it going to be all criminal activity? Here's an example. Say a parent of a teenager knows that that teenager is a member of a street gang, a criminal street gang. They commit robberies. They do shootings, they sell drugs, they do all kinds of bad stuff, and the parents are fully aware that their young person, their son or daughter, is involved in this gang. And then one night, went out with the gang, there's a shooting, and three people get killed, and they arrest this teenager, because one of the people shooting. And they do an investigation, and they find out that the parents were well aware of the fact that their son or daughter was a member of this gang, was involved in this, knew what the gang was all about. Do we then lock up the parents and charge them with involuntary manslaughter because they didn't do anything to intervene and get their son or daughter out of the gang? They didn't call the police. They didn't turn them in. They didn't search their rooms for weapons. They didn't get involved in where the drug dealing was and report that to the police. You know, is that the next step? That's the next logical step, of course. You know, and this is where emotions, because it's a school shooting and the most vulnerable of our children are attacked and killed, and we want to do one thing, but there are other actions that spring forth from a decision like this, if this is what we're going to do. So when I look at that, it's okay, that's one example. What if you have a child who's mentally challenged? And we know that some of these kids that are mentally challenged, they're doing the best that they possibly can, but they sometimes have violent outbursts, right? They break, destroy property. They get into conflicts with people. And the parents, okay, let's say they're perfect parents, highly educated, smart, they have a lot of resources, and they know this about their child, but yet they let that child go out to the playground. They let that child go to school. They let that child live a normal life as best as they can. And then that child overreacts and accidentally or purposely kill someone. Do those parents, we go lock them up now and say, well, you knew your child had this problem and you didn't go to the park with them. You knew your child had this problem and you weren't in the classroom with them, and whatever it be. Where does that vicarious liability go to the parents? Does it depend on the crime? Oh, the only crime we're going to do this for is for an active shooter at a school. We're not going to do for other crimes. Well, that's not right, because then you're not enforcing the law. You're not ensuring that the law is enforced fairly and with justice in mind. So this is where it can affect every single one of us. All right. How about if you know that your son or daughter has a heroin addiction and they're involved with drugs and they're getting drugs and their girlfriend or their boyfriend is involved with drugs and they're sharing drugs in your home, because there's nothing you could do about it. You'd rather them be in your house than living on the street as drug addicts, right? They won't go get help. You can't force them to go get help. But you knew all about it. And then one night, the boyfriend come home with some fentanyl-laced heroin, and him and his girlfriend, take their needle in the arm, and they both end up dead. Right? Now, normally, under those circumstances, we would say that's an overdose death. There's no homicide there. There could be for the person who bought the drugs and brought it home and gave it to the girlfriend, if that was the case, if the boy lived, then sure, he could probably be charged with possession, distribution, and vicarious liability for the death, just like the drug dealer. You know, that is one area where we do use criminal vicarious liability. You sell drugs to someone, they overdose and die on it, you can go after them, right? But in this case, the parents knew about the drug dealing. They knew about the use of drugs. And the boyfriend was 17 and the girlfriend was 16, and they're both dead now. Do we lock up mom and dad? Because, well, they never called the police on them when they were busy using the drugs. Hey, police, they're right in there right now using drugs. Come and get them. Get the drugs, lock them up, and hold them accountable. Do we do that? We don't do that. People are still dead, though, right? Even though it's not a shooter, putting drugs in their arms. Somebody brought the drugs to the party and handed it out, and people died, right? What if your young person is constantly taking the car without permission? Don't have a driver's license, but they keep taking the car. Now, this is things young people do. They take the car and they drive it around. I was a cop. I knew it happened all the time. And that young person constantly takes that car and goes joyriding. And while they're joyriding, they crash and kill two of their friends in the car, and they kill another couple in another car that they crash into. Now, mom and dad have known this. The investigation will prove that this boy has taken that car multiple times. Did they put a lock on the car? Did they hide the keys? Did they do anything to prevent that young person from taking their car? Now, in the past, all he's done is joyrided with it. Okay, but this time he killed people. Are the parents then liable for the death by auto that the young man caused? Right? So you see the slippery slope that this can lead to. And I'm not saying we shouldn't hold everyone accountable for everything they do when it comes to people being killed. Right? I'm not saying that. So I don't want anybody to misunderstand what Lieutenant Joe is saying. I'm just saying it has to be done properly. We have to have laws in place specific to this event. Now, maybe that is what will come out of the Crumbly decision. You know, if it's overturned, at any point, if it's overturned because the prosecutor didn't use a specific law, he twisted a law. And I'm not saying twisted in a bit. Is that he fit the elements around this incident to make their actions culpable, right? They bought him a gun. They didn't get him the mental health. They did bad parenting. And if they did good parenting, then this wouldn't have happened. And that's where this case is. So if the court finds that none of that is relative to a criminal action and this case is overturned, then that's going to free these parents, cause a lot of grief to a lot of people. So I am in favor of it if there is a good law that's in place that thinks all these things through, that as a society, we think these things through and say, okay, are we going to hold parents and guardians accountable and culpable, criminally culpable, for the actions of the juvenile in their life for only A, B, C, and D? But E, F, and G, we're not going to hold them accountable for that, even if it involves a death or something else. See, that's where this slippery slope comes in. Once we open this door and step through it with both feet, now we have to look at the other consequences. So think of all the ways. I've raised four wonderfully smart, good, and decent young people. My children are really really very good people at their hearts. They're decent people. They never got in trouble. They never got locked up. They never used drugs. I'm just very lucky, right? Those are good kids, and they did the right thing, and my wife and I, we tried really hard to stay on top of it. I used to tell my kids when they lived in my house that, you know what, that's your bedroom, but this is my house, and I love you very much, and I am going to go through your stuff. I'm going to go through your room, and I'm going to find out that you're starting to use drugs or that you got some other problem going on or you got a gun hidden in the room. I'm going to find that out because my job as parent is to make sure that you don't get involved in those things. And a lot of my friends would say, oh my God, you're going to violate their privacy? Violate their privacy? This is my house. Those are my children. And if they're going to get themselves in trouble because I felt uncomfortable going through their room to look and see if they had drugs, if they had weapons, if they had all kinds of things. No, that's what I did. And that's what I would do again. All of you out there have to make your decision what you do. But some people are saying, well, how did these parents of all these shooters not know that these kids are plotting this and doing this and doing that? Well, I can tell you, a lot of people didn't know. A lot of people didn't know about all these shooters and what they were planning. So let's go back to the Oxford school shooting where the Crumbly kid came in and shot his classmates. That day, apparently, he had been drawing some very, very detailed and disturbing journaling and drawing pictures of guns and people shot and writing things that were violent and terrible. And that's why the school called the parents in. So mom and dad come to the school the day of the shooting, and they call the kid down. And the kid comes down, and he's sitting there, and the parents are all talking about it, and the school says, well, we'd like you to take him home today. And the parents, for whatever reason, couldn't. You know, they had to go to work, or whatever. And so the school said, okay, well, he can go back to class. But we have to do something about these drawings or whatever. Right? So a lot of that information didn't come out unless you were there in the trial, so we need to find out more about that. But anyway, this kid leaves that meeting with his backpack, and he goes into the school. Mom and dad leave, and shortly thereafter, he produces the gun that they had bought for him 4 days ago from his backpack, and he starts shooting, and he injures a lot of kids and kills four of them. So as a criminal investigator and as someone who does threat assessments for schools, I can tell you, why didn't the principal of the school separate this kid from his backpack? They see these drawings about guns and shooting and killing and all this kind of stuff, and he has a backpack. Well, what have we learned over the years? The kids carried a gun in the backpack. Why wasn't he separated from that backpack? And why wasn't that backpack searched? And why wasn't his locker searched? Right? If they had searched the backpack, separated him from it, searched it, they would have found the gun. That would have prevented the shooting. So where is the liability on the principal and everyone else in that school district that they didn't do the right thing? Well, the answer could be they didn't know what to do. Well, isn't that what the parents are saying? We didn't know. We had no idea that he was serious, that he had all these problems, right? So if you go back through the articles, the archives of AmericaOutloud.news, if you go there, you'll see one I wrote a while back. And it was basically called Can We Spot Violence Before It Erupts? And it was about seeing these signs and these symptoms and what people do. I teach a course about it. I teach a course for law enforcement, for schools, and for parents so that people can understand when they're seeing something or their kid says something or the kid journals something or draws pictures of something. How do you interpret that information and determine that, well, it's nothing to be concerned about, or, wow, this is a big concern, like this school saw. The school saw this writing, and they called the parents in. This is very scary, very dangerous. This kid is talking about violence. So the parents were charged. If the school knew this, had this information, enough to be that upset, why didn't they have policy in place? Couldn't they have known that there are school shooters and they bring guns in backpacks sure, the information's out there. I teach the information. I go on a lot of different places and lecture about it, right? So in that article, Can We Spot Violence Before It Erupts? It gives a bunch of the signs and the symptoms and the things you should look for and school should look for in the things that people say, draw, doodle, journal, right? All these things are important. So the question then is, well, why were just the parents charged in this case? If the school didn't do the right thing, and they should have known that there was a potential for a school shooting, which obviously they did, they were worried about it, why didn't they check his backpack? Why did they let him stay in the school? Right? Isn't there liability there? And I'm not trying to put the blame on the principal or anybody that's there. I'm asking the question. But do you see how this slippery slope goes? If the parents who can say, hey, we're stunad. This is all we knew. We didn't think it was real. We didn't think it was a danger. We didn't think getting him a gun was going to have him go and kill the school. We had no idea he was going to do any of that. And they're still held accountable. What about the school? Doesn't the school have responsibility? Doesn't every school and every business, for that matter, in the United States have a responsibility to have good policy on workplace violence? Shouldn't they train all their employees on what to look for? Shouldn't they let the parents know in a big meeting, hey, if you see any of these kind of things on your kid, you should be concerned and get some help? See how far back that liability can go? And that's my question about this. Not that these two parents should have known or shouldn't have known, and that the fact that their son went to the school and he killed four innocent children and hurt many more is an absolute tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. Those parents and those families will never get over it. They may heal a bit, but they're never going to get over it. They lost that child. So if we're going to do this, we have to do it right. And that's my point. That's the purpose of the article. So I want you to go onto the website, go to the network's website, AmericaOutloud.news, and look up the article and read it. You can certainly reach out to me and email me. If you find, you know, the hosts, find Lieutenant Joe, there's a place there you can write to me and I'll hear about it. People use it for all kinds of things. You know, they send me, they liked my show, they didn't like my show, they didn't think I was funny, they thought I was too serious, whatever. I don't care. I like your comments. I like to hear. But this is a dialogue we all have to have. If you are a parent or a grandparent of a child in school, you have to ask yourself, is my school district doing the right thing? If my school district had a kid that made these kind of threats, would they know to separate him from his backpack, search the locker, call the police? Would they know to do any of that? Do they have policy in place? Do they teach the teachers what to look for? All right. So just recently, see, I write a lot of stuff. Recently on the platform, and you can find it, it was only a couple of weeks ago, I wrote another article with a lot of information, and it's about kill lists, K-I-L-L, lists. So kill lists are things that many of these school shooters make. They make a list of the people they want to kill that they hate for whatever reason, or they have anger towards or whatever. And I teach this course to teachers and to police as well, because you will find that schools will find a kill list and they will tell the student, you know, you shouldn't write things like this. This is really nasty. And that's it. They do nothing else with it. They don't realize the potential danger that they're standing in front of when someone has gone so far as to create an actual kill list. So that article is up on AmericaOutloud.news. And it's been published all over police magazines. I lecture on it. It's part of my active shooter response training for schools. So this is, I guess, what I want to talk about the Crumleys. All right. So we all have to decide, what do we want to happen here? You know, we want people held accountable for this. But the final part of this conversation, then I'm going to move on to a couple other things in the last couple minutes we have, is how do we judge the level of parenting of individuals? And what's good parenting? What's bad parenting? What if somebody is actually intellectually limited, right? They don't have a mental disease, but they only got a 90 IQ, husband and wife. And they're both working and they're trying to do what they do and they're raising the kid as best as they can. Maybe they got some troubles, who knows, whatever's going on. And the kid says and does things and they just don't find it to be shocking. They don't find it to be concerning enough to do anything about it. How do we judge that? Do we now have parenting classes? Okay, you're pregnant. Well, you're going to go to your doctor every 3 weeks. He's going to check you out. And mom and dad, you're also going to go to this course where you're going to learn about being a better parent. And do we legislate that? Can we legislate that? I don't know that we can. And this is my point about the slippery slope, right? All of these things start to pile up on what are we going to do? We all know there are good parents and bad parents. We all know there are smart parents and dumb parents. We all know that there are people that should not have children because they can't even take care of themselves, let alone take care of a young person. We know that young people need constant supervision, constant connection to find out what's going on in their lives, right? But we don't always have the ability to do that. And that's where a lot of these problems come from. But how, if we're going to legislate one thing, are we going to legislate another? Next thing you know, there's going to be a whole lockdown on the whole world because nobody can make a move. Nobody can do anything. And like I said earlier, what are parents allowed to do? Are they allowed to discipline their children? How far are they allowed to go? Are they allowed to yell at them, point their finger? Right? I don't know. I don't know. And that's the question. So go to the website. Go find that article and read it. And I think you'll find it interesting. And you can find my other ones that are on there too. This about school violence and all that kind of stuff. I do write a lot about that stuff. All right. So thank you for going on that journey with me. Now, let's see. Okay. What about our hostages? Our hostages in over in the Middle East. American hostages that have been held for months now. And our president is trying to shut down the Israeli government and their attack on Hamas because they don't like it. Because why? Because they think it's wrong? Because they think they're doing the wrong? No, because it's causing Joe Biden political problems. So therefore, well, the people of Israel, well, too bad. People have to live under a tyrannical rule of terrorist groups. Oh, well, too bad. I can't have my Muslim constituents be mad at me, so therefore I'm going to be mad at Israel. I'm going to slow Israel down. Israel then has to live with Hamas, who said, we will do more October 7th. We'll do it over and over and over again. Right? So my question is, where are our hostages? These are Americans who were kidnapped and are being held in brutal conditions, may already be dead, maybe being raped every single day. And what is our president doing about it? Telling Israel to slow down. Slow down. You better stop it. You better slow down. You better stop it. Is that a statesman? Is that someone who cares about their country and about citizens like you and me? Imagine if you and me were over there and we were being held captive all these months and your president is worried about his poll numbers because some of the constituents that might not vote for him have an affinity to the terrorist group? How does that work? How does that work? See, so this goes back to another previous episode. You got to go back in the podcast and listen to all my episodes. Every once in a while, I say something good, something profound, right? When we talk about our country is so messed up. We don't know top from bottom, right from wrong. You know, back in the day when I was a kid, there was Superman comics, right? I wasn't a big comics guy, but they were out there. I read them once in a while. And there was a Superman comic. And in this world, Superman went to this alternative universe where everything was backwards. Right? Up was down, in was out, good was bad. The bizarro world, he called it. That's kind of where we're living. We're living in the bizarro world. We have wide open borders just letting people pour in, including terrorists, including killers and gang members. Sure, lots and lots of good, decent people who just want a better life. But lots and lots of bad people that may end up hurting you or somebody in your family. Right? And if you're one of those people out there in your underwear, in the basement taking notes about Lieutenant Joe, how are you going to feel when one of those people that you demand be let in here hurt somebody in your family? Is that going to change your tune? That's all anybody is saying here. We're not saying people shouldn't come in. Immigration has helped our country. It has made us a better country. But we have to have controlled immigration. We have to know who's coming specifically. We can't just have open borders. So that's weird and upside down. We have a criminal justice system that was turned against half the country when they attacked Donald Trump, right? Because he's right. When Trump says that, he goes, you know, they're coming after me. They're attacking me, but they're coming after you. So when we have these various law enforcement, federal law enforcement people, and it's not the people on the ground, not the men and women who are the age special agents and all that. It's the leadership that has been politicized. The Department of Justice has been politicized. And they're coming after all of us. This is bizarro world. This is bizarro world. And our kids are going to suffer for all of it. All right. So I got so involved with this. Now let me go to my pages of outrages here. I was going to do a whole thing on crime. Let me see. Let me talk about this first. Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, he has been coming out a lot, a lot of times recently, talking about the increased threat of terrorism on America. Now, he's saying that because he knows that million people came in here. We don't know who they are, but we know we've stopped several hundred people on the terrorist watch list. We know there are people coming from 170 different countries, including countries where they hate us and want to do something bad to us. And he gets information you and I don't have. He gets to hear the chatter that's going on, that the intelligence agencies pick up through informants, through wiretaps, through listening to radio transmissions, all this kind of stuff. He knows that there's something up. We all can feel it. What are we going to do the morning you wake up, or the afternoon, or when you're sitting having a sandwich at the dinner time and you hear about this terrorist attack? Whatever it is that's going to come. Are you going to say, gee, I'm glad I'm not there? Or are you going to say to yourself, oh my gosh, why didn't we know this was going to happen? Why didn't we do anything about it? So pay attention to that. Christopher Wray is out there saying it a lot. And I think the reason that he's saying it is because he doesn't want to be caught short-footed when something happens and go, you didn't say anything. You didn't know nothing. So he's saying it many times. And they're going to say, man, well, Christopher Wray's been telling us for the last 8 months that something was going to happen. Right? So pay attention. Pay attention. Look and listen. Right? Pay attention to what's around you. All right. So I don't know. This is crime, I guess. I guess it's part of a crime thing. We recently just had Orenthal James Simpson, O.J. Simpson, died. Apparently he had cancer, and he died. Now, O.J. was a beloved figure when I was a young man. He was the greatest running back I had ever seen. My Uncle John was at the game where O.J. Went over 2,000 yards. He was a hero to America. He was really an amazing athlete. Then he was in the movies. He did all those things. And then he was charged with brutally murdering his wife and a young man that was visiting her. And I remember that time. And while he was acquitted, not guilty, in the criminal trial, he was found responsible in the civil trial. And that's not unusual. At the time, you know, our country was really suffering from a lot. We had just had the Rodney King situation going on, and there was a lot of things. There's a thing called jury nullification, where a jury decides, I don't care what the facts are, I am not convicting this person. So usually if somebody, somebody's child is molested and the father goes and kills the guy, he might be charged with murder, but the jury says, I don't care. His father was protecting his kid, and we're not going to find him guilty. Well, I think that's what happened with O.J. I think there was jury nullification, because as a criminal investigator, I've looked at it, and I'm convinced that he committed those murders. All right, so we're running out of time today. This time went very quick. I want to tell you all, be careful out there. Be positive. Pray to God for our country and for our families. Watch over us all, and I will see you down the road.